From the Credit Union National Association, this is the CUNA News Podcast. Credit Union People, Credit Union Ideas.
CUNA HR and Organizational Development Council Conference is a unique event. It offers an opportunity for human resource and organizational development professionals to gather in person and focus on topics specific to their roles within the credit union industry. I'm Ron Jost, Senior Editor with CUNA News. In this series of interviews, we share some of the many voices that contributed to the 2023 CUNA HR and Organizational Development Council Conference held recently in San Diego. First up is Sylvia Dimma, Chief Human Resources Officer at Michigan State University Federal Credit Union in East Lansing, Michigan, and Second Vice Chair of the CUNA HR and Organizational Council Executive Committee. Let's talk first about the pain points that the attendees discussed today. Do you want to address that first?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So in our HR exchange conversation, we had a number of credit unions that came together, and we really were trying to have open discussion about the different challenges and different pain points that each organization is experiencing, to sort of learn from each other or share things that are working successfully at my credit union that might be helpful at your credit union. So some of the key pain points that we touched on today was high turnover. So a lot of areas are feeling difficult time in recruiting individuals, or when they do hire individuals, having them stay for long periods of time. There was a number of credit unions that shared that individuals come in and leave after 3 months, which we all know is very difficult to actually train the individual and have them be at full productivity, and they're already out the door. Another component that has been a challenge has been the transition to hybrid work environments and remote work environments. How do we make that work within our organizations, with member service obviously being our key focus, but then also maintaining our culture and our organization dynamics to make sure that we're creating an engaging work environment and that our people are still connecting? And then probably the third one that was a really high focus as well was around leadership development and emerging leaders, and how do we create leaders to be successful within the organization outside of selecting subject matter experts, but really having those leadership skills to be able to advance the organization, advance the departments in the credit union. And how do we tie all that together when we think about hybrid work, high turnover, and development?
One thing that was interesting about the understaffing was that it really affects the organization deeply and widely, kind of throughout the organization, doesn't it? Everything from recruiting to pay to it just goes so deep. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when we think about the hiring and the recruiting and the turnover, the reason it becomes very impactful is in order to develop and train our individuals to be successful in their roles, it takes time. And so while we're developing this individual, there's other individuals that are picking up that extra workload. And so with the transitions back and forth, everyone feels as though they're being overworked. It causes more stress. It causes anxiety within the team. And we're trying to make sure that we can evolve that, or that we can create ways to enhance our processes or improve things so that we can still be successful as an organization while maintaining good engagement as we're experiencing these points of higher turnover.
Exactly. We also talked about what credit unions are finding success with in this environment. Mm-hmm. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a number of credit unions that have adopted different processes. So they've launched different leadership journeys or leadership development that is really engaging with individuals who want to be a leader, and they enter into this program to learn. Most of the programs are, you know, 9 months or a little bit longer so that they can go through and do the development pieces. But then it also gives the individual the opportunity to decide if they want to be a leader of others or if they just want to be a leader within their own role, and maybe they don't want to manage individuals. And that's one of the key things that we're trying as organizations, as credit unions, to really understand is that that not all individuals can be successful leaders of other people, nor is that what they're trying to aspire to. So giving individuals the opportunity to learn that and to really come to those realizations helps not only the employees that they will manage, but helps themselves in really aligning their career to what their career aspirations are.
With the hybrid and remote environment, I think there's always going to be challenges, but it seems like it's here to stay. But credit unions, I was impressed, the credit unions really have become savvy with it as far as what's required from a procedural legal standpoint. And they really had an engaging discussion about it. Do you want to discuss that a little bit?
Absolutely. And so hybrid has been, you know, a challenge, I will say, but I think it's been something that we've really focused on because prior to the pandemic, most credit unions had no remote employees or maybe one or two remote employees within their organization. And so this was a new avenue that all credit unions went down, again, with the focus of how do we provide the superior member service? How do we make sure that our members get the products and services that they need at the time that they need them? And so through the hybrid journey, what we've really tried to explore and what a lot of the credit unions were sharing is to really determine what works, what doesn't work for their organization. So how do we set expectations? How do we have clear expectations for the employees? What's different when they're working in a hybrid remote environment versus an on-site environment? How do we really align that sense of urgency? You know, people are accustomed to getting responses and connecting with other individuals within the organization to get answers, to get to members, or to, you know, be able to make decisions. And so how do we maintain that connection? And how do we maintain that sense of urgency, you know, was a large topic that was brought up amongst the team, which I thought was really exciting to hear. And I think it's really, how do we empower our employees and build that trust so that they feel the engagement and the value in the work that they're doing and the purpose in their work to really build this hybrid and remote environment to be successful?
Part of that challenge is performance management as well. And you spoke a little bit about that. Do you want to just speak to that very briefly?
Yes, absolutely. And so with performance management, one of the things that we did is the same metrics and the same performance criteria that we were using when you were in person is the exact same criteria that we're using as a hybrid worker. We didn't make any changes in that regards. Now, did we put expectations in terms of like your internet connectivity? Yes, because we want to make sure that your home office is reflective of you being successful in your role. But when it came to performance, we held everyone accountable to the same expectations and the same levels of productivity.
Next up is my conversation with General Sessions Speaker Diana Kander, in which we discuss the magic of curiosity in the innovation process, as well as the importance of organizations to say no when they are in the process of innovating. So, Diana, kind of the foundation of your talk was how important curiosity is to be an innovator. Do you want to kind of build on that a little bit?
Sure. I think we all show up to work with a to-do list of things we need to accomplish, and that to-do list doesn't leave any space, any room for creativity, innovation, thinking bigger, thinking more strategically. And all I want people to do is consciously insert that space throughout their week, both on their calendar and in their mind about how important it is, so that they can every now and then like recalibrate and make sure that they're working on things that matter and come up with the bigger ideas that are going to make a bigger impact.
And one of the things I found compelling about your story is that you're a refugee from the Ukraine. And how does that inform your story as an innovator?
You know, I was forced into using curiosity and innovation, but I used it so frequently that it went from being the skill set that I used to survive to now it is the skill set that helps me thrive, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And another thing that seems counterintuitive, but it definitely makes sense in the way you explain it, is one of the things that's important to innovation is that you have to eliminate some things from an organizational standpoint to innovate. Do you want to talk a little bit about how organizations do that?
Yeah, you think about having a reverse resume. This is things that you say no to. And the quality of the things that you say no to determine the quality of the things that you're working on. So if you're saying no to ones and twos, then you're not working on anything much better. But if you're saying no to like sevens and eights, boy, what you're working on has got to be incredible.
And you talked about ones and twos and seven and eights. And part of that is a big thing of that is rating your ideas. You're not saying yes or no, but you're rating your ideas. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
That's a big thing for you, too.
I think a lot of people decide yes or no for certain initiatives, and I think stop using a binary method to judge things, because when you do that, you end up saying yes to, as we proved in this talk, to ones and twos, but instead rank things on a 1 through 10. I've even had credit unions who decided to, in loan committee, go on a 1 to 10 scale instead of a yes or no scale, because it helps you have richer conversations about whatever you're considering.
Yeah, that's a great example for credit unions in the loan space. Just, it's not binary. A yes and a no just doesn't work. But if you rate people, that's a great way to help people kind of ramp up their capacity to take out loans. That's a great, great idea. And finally, it's just important for people to embrace their identity as innovators, isn't
yes.
it? And do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I just think we're all thrust into being innovators. The world is changing so quickly today. And the bad news is this is the slowest it will ever be from here on out. And I'm sorry to be the bearer of that news, but just like nobody had to have keyboarding skills 30 years ago, we didn't need innovation skills, but we do now. The skills of figuring out what's working and how to think critically about the initiatives we should be working on and how to create value is so important, because it's never been easier to be busy and accomplish nothing, to just put in a full day's worth of work but not move our credit union forward. And what I'm talking about is making sure that the time you're investing is creating value at the end of the day.
Next is my conversation with Jan Johnson, who recently retired as Executive Vice President of Organizational Agility at Royal Credit Union in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. At the time of her retirement, Jan also served as the chair of the CUNA HR and Organizational Development Council Executive Committee and was a member of the CUNA Council's Executive Committee. Johnson was honored at the conference for her service to the councils. In this conversation, she shares her thoughts on being honored and tells us how the council's helped her through a credit union career. You earned special recognition at this conference. You just retired a couple weeks ago, is that correct?
That is correct.
So how did you feel on learning you were going to be honored?
Well, I was humbled, first of all, very humbled. You know, at CUNA and this whole experience of working with CUNA and as part of the council, and then in my last couple of years as chair of the executive committee, It's brought me so much, I don't know, how, so much understanding of the industry from the first year I was in the industry, that to have come through this many years and then be honored like that for something that I feel I probably got more than I ever gave more for, just humbled and very special. It was a special moment.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that further, because you obviously work at a tremendously successful credit union, and you've had a successful career, but you've contributed a lot of your time and effort, obviously, to the council. And what compelled you to do that?
You know, I think because I was new to the industry, not just new to my credit union, but new to the entire credit union industry, I realized that there was a need for me to immerse myself in understanding not just my credit union, but the entire industry. And so CUNA is the best source for anyone who's new to the credit union industry. I believe CUNA is the best source to introduce, connect, learn, and also be able to share, right? So obviously coming into the industry from outside, I had things that I could share as well, but mostly I had a lot of learning to do. So that's how I got connected with CUNA. I went to my first conference. My CEO was very, very strongly supportive of my investing my time and the organization's resources in my getting a really true in-depth understanding of the credit union industry and what it means, and really pointed me towards CUNA. And so I followed his advice, and I went to the first council conference for my field, HR and organizational development, and I was hooked from that one conference. And I personally thought, this is a group that I can learn a lot from, but I can also feel like I'm contributing something. So that's how I started to get involved. At first, I started serving on, I became a member of the council and started serving on committees for the council. And later, I would be a chair of a subcommittee for one of those committees. And then eventually I ran for the executive committee and was selected. And so it was just a progression.
There really feels like there's a place for everybody to contribute.
There is. And, I realize that throughout our careers, there are different demands on our times, on our time and our resources, both from what our credit union can manage, but as well as we as individual people with other parts of our lives can manage. And so the nice thing is that there is that level of flexibility where, you know, in those years where you can contribute more, you can do that. And then you can back off a little bit and then come back in and do even more if you want and if you're able. And so you never really have to completely step away and stop contributing or stop learning.
In our next conversation, breakout speaker Trish Cordes, Chief Culture Officer at Tucson Federal Credit Union in Arizona, discusses how culture is defined within each specific credit union and also how important it is for HR professionals to understand the return on investment of their initiatives. To start with, one of the things we started out with was we talked about culture, and culture is hard to define. Let's talk about the definition that we arrived at today. Do you want to just start there?
Around the room, everyone had a very similar definition, that it is as much as we can define culture by a value or a belief, by a term. Overall, it was the feeling, it was the essence, it was truly how people behaved and collectively were, just their being, how they showed up in the workplace. And that seemed to be across the room, the definition of culture.
And were there any eye-opening moments for you today? What really captured you? It was a wonderful session. Everybody was really engaged.
Thank you. I think that the biggest aha moment for me was I expected that a credit union with 8,000 employees would have very different challenges of attracting, engaging, and retaining top talent than a credit union with 100 employees. And that was just not the case. It was that we all share similar struggles, that we all share like-minded challenges as HR and OD professionals, that those need to continue to be a focus. They need to be top of mind. So I think that was a big takeaway for me today.
One thing you talked about was that you talked about defending the spend. Can you talk about what that means, defending the spend?
Sure. I think when a C-suite, or certainly when the folks that are holding budget dollars, when you go to buy a new software, buy a new app, spend money at an event, buy something that is purchased, maybe a service, that we need to make sure that we are the best stewards of our members' dollars. And that means that there needs to be a true return on investment. And so pushing our HR colleagues to look at why they need something and then use a tool to potentially align that. But defending the spend is, I think, is something that's necessary in every boardroom at every credit union in America.
And what was that tool?
It is a tool that I have been very fortunate to use. Our executive vice president, CFO, created a tool that aligns how many FTE do you need, what is the monthly spend for a software potentially, or an item, and it will push out how long are we going to pay for something before we start to see a return on that investment, and that's what that tool helps you to uncover.
Next up is General Session Speaker Mike Schenck, who serves as CUNA Vice President of Research and Policy Analysis and Chief Economist. Schenck offers some insight on what we might expect from the economy in the coming months. Mike, what's the prospect for a recession in 2023?
Well, our baseline forecast says that it's going to happen. I've been at CUNA now for 31 years, and this is the first time in those 31 years that we've actually written up a forecast in black and white that says there's going to be a recession. We think the good news is we think that it'll be relatively mild, so not very deep, and it won't last very long. But still, if the Fed is able to orchestrate what it thinks it can in terms of bringing inflation down, they're going to put 1.5 million folks out of work. That's their baseline. So that's going to be really impactful, not just for those 1.5 million people, but for their families and for their communities. And overall, we see the economy actually growing this year, but only by about 0.5%.
So what is the prospect for unemployment? What is this? What is the situation for unemployment right now, and what do you forecast?
The unemployment rate is quite low, 3.5%. So that's essentially, actually a little bit below what most economists would consider full employment. The Fed says that its terminal unemployment rate is going to be about a little bit over 4.5%, and that's consistent with what our baseline forecast says. So the job market, in the face of the Fed increases, the job market has been remarkably resilient. We're still adding almost 300,000 jobs a month. If you look at the three-month moving average, it's 300,000. And that's down from a year ago when it was 500,000 a month on average. But that's still really, really strong job growth. And the other part of that that's kind of interesting is that the number of jobs available for every person that's unemployed at the moment is 1.7. That's near an all-time high. It's come down a little bit, but it's still near an all-time high.
And how is inflation affecting all this? What's the prospect for inflation in the next year?
Yeah, so as you know, the Fed's goal in all of this policy response, jacking up the Fed funds rate, is to bring inflation down. CPI, headline inflation, peaked out at 9% last year. Over the last 9 months, it's been generally coming down, and nine consecutive months of decline, really, or near decline. And at the moment, overall inflation is at 5%. At the end of the year, we expect it to be all the way down to 3.5%, which is still a little bit higher than the Fed's preference. Their target is really 2%, but we feel like we'll get closer to that 2% target when we edge into 2024.
And one thing you talked about in your discussion, what I thought was very compelling, is that one-way credit unions can kind of be resilient through all of this is just by knowing their purpose in serving their members. Do you want to speak to a little bit about to that point?
Sure. As you know, CUNA, at the behest of credit unions, has embraced a project around financial well-being. And the deal was, historically, we, from an advocacy perspective, have leaned heavily on, and I wouldn't say focused exclusively, but we lean heavily on the idea of a level playing field and regulatory burdens and trying to remove that. And credit unions told us several years ago, why don't we shift focus here and talk less about that and talk about credit union impact. Talk about how we change people's lives and how we do that differently and more effectively than other depositories. If we can spend more time highlighting those differences, that can be very, very helpful. It'll help more people understand the credit union difference and the transformative power of cooperative finance.
In this next discussion, General Sessions speaker Vibhas Vertanji, senior practice expert at Gallup, talks about how important the impact of engagement with managers is on the overall well-being of employees. Your discussion was very enlightening, and one of the things that struck me was the importance of managers, not only in our jobs, in the engagement they give us, but how important they are in our life. Do you want to discuss that?
I think that's key, because what we've seen is that managers have a direct impact, not just on the performance of the individual they're managing, but overall well-being. And I think that's critical. And when I say well-being, it's not just the work or the career part, but also things like emotional well-being, social well-being, even physical well-being. Managers can do so much to create thriving environments for workplaces. So I think the role of the manager is not just limited to work. It's really they're instrumental in the lives of people, of humans. So I think I see it that way.
You talked about the importance of friendship at work. And when we had this at CUNA, we discussed this. And what is the importance of friendship at work?
Yeah, I think a lot of our research actually shows that friendships are critical to performance. Now, when we think about friendship, and we have a question on our engagement survey called, do you have a best friend at work? And we've seen that particular question, if that's present, what is present is trust. there are trusting relationships at work. Now, many companies and organizations have this thing called a buddy system where, you know, you're kind of, there's a buddy and so on. What tends to happen is that you're paired with a buddy. You know, you might not have the chemistry with that buddy. So do you have, you might have one best friend at work or you might have 10. The key question we're trying to address here is there trust at work? Is there somebody who I can trust who can watch my back?
Sure, sure. And another part of moving from boss to coach is focusing on the employee's strengths rather than the weaknesses. Do you want to talk about the benefits of that?
Massive differences. It's almost switching from a deficit-based mindset to a positive, appreciative mindset by focusing your energy and your conversations around what people are naturally talented at doing. Now, that sounds simplistic, but the opposite happens, where most performance reviews are all about what's wrong with you. But there's a lot of potential. I mean, the role of performance management is to inspire. And you inspire people by individualizing to their strengths and what they're able to do and the difference they can make in the world.
And part of that is asking the right questions. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, and I think when you think about asking the right questions, this it seems commonsensical, but a lot of managers aren't able to, because that's something that's not something that they're trained to do, is ask great questions, or what I'd call affirmative questions or generative questions, questions that actually create energy, questions that have people think differently. So we need to train our people to be able to ask affirmative, positive questions that create insight and reflection for employees.
My next conversation is with Virginia Witham, Chief Human Resources Officer at Raleigh Credit Union in Corpus Christi, Texas, and the 2023 CUNA HR and Organizational Development Council Professional of the Year. Virginia shares her thoughts on winning the award and what drives her as a servant leader.
As the 2023 Professional of the Year, what was your first reaction when you learned that you won the award?
Surprised, honored, and actually humbled. There are so many wonderful HR practitioners, individuals that are helping their credit unions grow, that I was just, and then also to read the nomination, I felt like I'd already won. I felt like all the positive feedback that I had received, it was, and so I felt like I had already won before I even knew I won.
I've seen the nominations before, not your specific nominations, but nominations like that. They're always wonderful to read of all the entries.
Yeah, it made me feel very appreciated and very appreciative of the team that I have and the relationships that I've built.
In that regard, because I know that creates a lot of intrinsic happiness, you know, with your work and your life, what drives you? I mean, you won the award, so obviously you're very accomplished and admired and appreciated. What drives you every day to be so motivated and driven to do good in your work? Can you explain that a little bit?
Right. I think it's a fundamental philosophy individually that actually matches really well for me within the credit union space that I work and the work that I do is servant leadership. You know, the desire to serve others. And by serving others, then we become leaders as well. It's just giving back. It's looking for opportunities to give back, to have that conversation. So for me, my individual philosophy as an individual and just my core value is really being a servant leader and helping others. So I think that in the human resources space, I've always been drawn to helping others grow. I first started my career years ago, interestingly enough. I had a bit of a journey, thought, you know, I wanted to be a teacher, and then thought, oh, that wasn't quite hitting it for me. Then I'm going to get my BSRN, I'm going to be a nurse. I've always had this draw to help, to sure. be with people. But then I have such a affinity for or passion for numbers. I like the business side.
Sure.
So I actually have a business degree. But then all of a sudden I noticed, wow, I can do business and people. That's nirvana. Perfect job for me. So I think in human resources, it just worked out that I was able to do what I love.
That's a great story. Yeah. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask, how has the HROD Council helped you in your work, or what has it done for you?
You know, it's been amazing. My very first CUNA conference, I was new to the credit union field. And I came, and it was such an experience of networking, getting to know other professionals, also my vendor relationships. So when I came this year again, and it was like old home week, I got to see everybody that I had made all these connections with 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it felt wonderful to that we've remained friends for these 10 years, but it actually started with the first CUNA conference. It was the first conference that I had gone to credit union related, and I was hooked. I was hooked. And getting to know individuals, and we have sustained relationships for well over 10 years.
Yeah, it is amazing.
It is. It's so collaborative. Everyone wants to help one another, give feedback. People don't hold back. There's not this feeling of competition. It's really camaraderie and this real goal to help people helping people. But not only that, from an HR perspective, we also see our part in the credit union movement. And that is what I think spoke volumes to me. And so I've just very much enjoyed it and continue to.
Thanks for listening to the CUNA News Podcast. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio.